Hey, this is Heath Padgett, and welcome to the RV Entrepreneur Podcast, episode 205. The RV Entrepreneur is a podcast for nomadic entrepreneurs, and on today's episode, I'm interviewing Eric of Eric and Jay's RV Resort. I first heard of Eric and Jay's RV Resort whenever a friend sent me an article about a really high-end glamping resort that was popping up in Houston, which is the area that I'm from. I spent quite a bit of time on their website and can definitely vouch for the fact that Eric and Jay's RV Resort is incredibly high-end and beautiful, which after going to a lot of RV resorts is really not the norm. Something I've talked about on this podcast quite a bit over the past year or two is that Alyssa and I have a dream slash goal of owning our own RV park. We spent most of the past 6 years living in our RV on the road and visiting a lot of parks, and just a lot of them fall short from our expectations. This is something that we first started noodling on during our 2018 RV Entrepreneur Summit, our conference that we host for nomadic entrepreneurs. We were hosting RVE that year at a campground in Fredericksburg, and we set up a little makeshift co-working space with fast internet, coffee, and beer for our attendees. Over the week, it was amazing to see everyone gather in one place to hang out, socialize, get some work done. This is a community of people that normally don't get to spend a lot of time around each other, other than occasionally bumping into people when you're boondocking in the desert or on the beach. What was appealing to us was not just the idea of gathering friends in a circle to drink coffee and beer, but bringing together a group of like-minded people in one place, people who value experiences in the outdoors and who are also building cool businesses on the road, like us. And over the past few years, while this dream has been on the back burner for us, we've spent time in New Zealand and in Italy, visiting campeggios and holiday parks in New Zealand, and kind of just taking subtle notes of different ideas that we'd like to incorporate into our park one day. And this year, when we got back on the road in our Forza, we really planned our entire trip around trying to potentially find an RV park that we could buy. We asked people for their suggestions of the favorite places they've ever stayed. Our goal is to hit up as many of these parks as we possibly could in 2020, but unfortunately, due to COVID, we only got to visit a handful this year. Nonetheless, we still stayed at a lot of amazing parks this year, and we looked at about 9 or 10 different RV parks for sale that we were considering purchasing. We still have yet to pull the trigger on a campground, but I was really excited to sit down with Eric and talk in this episode and really hear from him, what is it like to bring a campground to life from scratch? In this episode, we really cover a lot of the nuts and bolts and maybe sometimes a little bit of the boring side of starting a campground, but really, it's important. And for someone like me, it's also very interesting to be able to understand what's the permitting process like when you're trying to find a park? What are the things that you need to be thoughtful of, such as where the water is going to be draining when it's raining when you're in a place like Houston? And a lot of these different elements that if you've ever dreamed of starting an RV park or building one, I think you will find really interesting. Before we get into today's episode, just a quick word from our sponsor. Today's episode is sponsored by ID Plans, and it's actually less of a sponsorship than it is really an opportunity. ID Plans is a software and service company based in Tampa, Florida, that provides solutions for property managers. Over the past 20 years, ID Plans has been able to hire a number of full-time RVers to help survey commercial properties, and they are looking to hire 3 to 5 additional teams over the next couple months. Here's a clip from Carolyn, who has been traveling with her husband across the country working with ID Plans.
Me and my husband have been traveling full-time together since 2016. The whole time we've been on the road, we've been always looking for a job to do something along the way to make some money, but still be able to have our freedom. We tried several different work camping positions, and we realized that that was not a good way to make money. It was a great way to meet people, but the money was just not there. So we stumbled across ID Plans about a year and a half ago, and since we've worked for the company, it has changed our lives. We love working for ID Plans. We get to set our own schedule, and we get paid to travel across the U.S. It's such a great opportunity.
Over the last few years, I've seen a lot of companies hire RVers for different types of short and longer term jobs. And I can honestly say that this is one that almost immediately after getting trained, you can make a near full-time income while also still having another side hustle or business to do on the road. You'll receive training for their software, be able to park your RV right on the job sites, and run the entire operation from your RV. If you want to learn more, you can send an email to rvjobs@idplans.com. That is rvjobs@idplans.com. All right, let's get into today's episode with Eric. Eric, what's up, man? Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I'm the most I'm the biggest fan of when I go to companies or small businesses websites and they talk to you like real people. So like when I went to y'all's about page on Eric and Jay's RV Resort, which is an awesome name, it's like, who the hell are we? And giving that description, I feel like I already know you. So it's going to be fun to kind of dig in, man.
Well, good. I hope to be the guy that I am online.
Don't we all? So I'm excited to dig in for multiple reasons, but one of the big ones is my wife, Alyssa, and I have been searching for a campground this past year to buy. And so we've been digging into all these different performers and looking at all these different parks, some built from scratch. So I'm really just going to use this time to pick your brain and kind of glean any knowledge that you've accrued over the past couple of years of getting into this process. But let's start at the beginning. Where did this idea come for kind of a different higher end RV experience with your partner, Jay?
The beginning of the idea really started probably closer to 5 years ago when I was in my time. I have a mortgage business and I write loans for people in houses, and some of the people that I write loans for commercial properties. And one of the properties that I looked at was the guy down in South Texas back when crude was at $100 a barrel. This gentleman, a partner from Austin, they wanted to build a man camp to go alongside their RV park. And it wasn't really like a park. It was some asphalt with some water hoses and electricity. Actually, I don't think it had electricity. It had no electricity. Yet it was still getting $450 per space. And I think they had 40 of them, and they wanted to put that up as equity and not have to put any down payment on the $2 million that they wanted to build this kind of pseudo hotel made out of double wides. And, you know, it was going to, those things really end up being pretty nice. And I think they were going to do a pool as well. But when I was looking to put and structure this deal, what I ran across, or one of the parts of it, was looking at the numbers. And when I saw the type of money that was coming from just a little bit of concrete, a lot of dirt and sewage, that I was like, wow, this is unbelievable. And that was when this all started. So from then, from that point, we kind of moved a little, you know, fast forward a little bit. I'm always keeping my eye on it. Then I really wanted to kind of press forward with doing it, being tired of the mortgage industry to a certain extent. I started looking around, and, you know, of course, the first thing that everybody looks for is, you know, the big glamorous, you know, I'm going to build it right here on the water. It's going to have a lazy river. You know, we're gonna have umbrellas everywhere. Everything's gonna be perfect. This is the right spot. No, this isn't the right spot. So we went to a lot of places and just started learning a lot about what was going on in this industry. And the first thing that I figured out after about 3 months of hitting it pretty hard in terms of searching, I figured out that I was trying to, instead of running a poker game in my mom's basement, I was trying to start a casino. And I was like, wow, that might be the hard way to do it. You know, what do I know about a lazy river, much less what do I know about all this underground and the plumbing and everything that goes with a regular RV park? And so so we kind of, you know, slowed our roll a little bit and started looking a little bit more locally. And I think that's been I know actually at this point that's been a good decision, because there's way too many mistakes that could have been made with going with the resort as opposed to, or I shouldn't say resort, but like the weekend destination as opposed to more of a monthly type of destination.
When you were, what was the name of your job? You were a mortgage consultant?
I have a mortgage company in Houston.
So you're basically looking, and you're the kind of acting as the lender in these scenarios, like, so digging into the numbers and kind of understanding all that is kind of your bread and butter, it sounds like.
Yes. Although I'm not a huge number guy, I don't normally analyze them. In this particular instance, I wanted since it was a commercial loan, I needed to like analyze the numbers so that I could sell it to a bank. But the numbers, I mean, you know, for 40 pads, the amount of revenue that it was pushing up was really incredible, especially with what they were offering. And they, I mean, you probably would never stay on that park. I mean, I'd have to pay you probably $200 to stay on that park a night, and I can't afford it.
I mean, it kind of makes me think of, you know, I'm on RV parks for sale all the time, just kind of looking at what's on the market from a campground perspective. It kind of reminds me a lot of the camps that you see kind of out in like Midland, Odessa, when guys are, you know, when there's a project going on out there, there's a lot of guys working, you know, spending a couple of years, and then basically they're just selling those for pretty cheap. It sounds kind of simple. What were the raw numbers that really pulled you in, like from a, from an expense to a revenue ratio type of thing that you were like, hey, this actually could be really interesting? Do you remember what any of those numbers were like?
I mean, the main number that I remember from that intrigued me immediately was the $450 for those. I mean, they really didn't have any underground. They didn't have anything. And they were still getting $450 a month per pad. And they weren't even pads. It was essentially a concrete slab, and they were splitting people up. That seemed like easy pickings. Now, that, you know, it certainly at that point, and that's a kind of what the Eagleford was, the Texas, it was too good to be true. So really that is, you know, there's no such thing as easy pickings, especially in the post-corona era. I mean, you have to be tight, and everyone I think is becoming a little bit, I think everyone's going to be a little bit tighter on the wallet and think about what they're spending a little bit more. I mean, at least I'm feeling that in Houston these days.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, and so to answer your question, I don't know what number it was, but it was intriguing that amount, that an acre was pulling in that kind of revenue.
That's crazy.
And they hadn't done anything.
Yeah. So you had this kind of thought, you looked at the numbers, you're like, man, a campground could be pretty cool. And then a few years go by. At what point did it go from kind of back of your head idea to, I need to actually start working on this?
Well, you know, everything, I'm kind of one of those guys that spends it when it comes in. And as a kid, I used to have to hide money for myself.
Oh, in the same way.
But I had money later. And so I treat myself the same way as an adult. I like to take money and hide it into different projects so that I don't touch it and buy fancy cars or stuff you don't need. So I kind of started getting, you know, like I had a friend of mine that created a really, really solid company and product that serviced oil and gas industry, and we, you know, all of us were fortunate enough to be able to invest in it, and I took my winnings from that and as quickly as I could found this land. And the way the land came together was really, you know, there's always an interesting story to how people got their land, and that's really the first home that you bought a house before, I'm assuming.
No, I haven't. We're looking for our first one now. We've been in RV for 6 years, so I bought RVs, just never land before.
Okay. Well, and it sounds, you know, if you keep on listening to enough of your own podcast, sooner or later, you're going to buy some land and put an RV park on it. But, and there'll be a good story about it, but what happened in our situation is people knew I was looking, and I had a business partner that was part of the original group, but later backed out. But he had found somebody that was wanting to continue. He had two investors that were doctors that were going to help build this RV. They were going to be the money behind him building an RV park to service the medical center in Houston. And beautiful, beautiful 10 acres of land. I mean, like in a perfect little spot. But anyway, I got a call on a Sunday and he's like, hey, you need to come check it out. I was like right now. He's like, yeah, right now. So we checked it out. We picked up the contract and bought it. We didn't do much feasibility just because the price was such that if we needed to move it on to something else, we would. So we had 30 days to close on 10 acres, which is, I mean, I know that sounds crazy, but we looked at different things that we could do with it if the RV model didn't work or if we couldn't get the city to agree to what we were trying to build. And so we moved forward with it and really kind of fast forward to, I guess, the process beginning. I guess that's when the process started. I think our original conversation, the reason we're talking is to kind of go through the process of this. I think that's probably the date that this project started, was that Sunday.
And so at this point, you made a good investment, had a return from that. So you're sitting on some cash and basically you're like, I need to not go buy anything stupid. So if I want to put it in something, some real estate that I could potentially do this campground idea, maybe it's a good time. And at this point, have you accrued any skills in construction over the past few years that you have kind of the knowledge going into this, like you can build it or you just, is that something you're like, I'm just going to figure that out?
I had zero knowledge of how to do this. I mean, really looking back, it really kind of asinine that I would think that I could take on such a project. I think it's about finding the right people to make your job happen. I mean, everyone, no matter what, even if I knew everything in the world, I'm still going to have to pay the contractor the same amount. I'm still going to have to pay the architect the same amount. So what I kind of figured out is, you know, the part that I was really missing through this whole period, that like when you start getting to engineers, and the part that I was really missing out on that I could have really, it would have really helped me to know, is all the verbiage that's used. Like, I mean, now their words that I use every day now, but I had no idea what a lot of this stuff was. And so when somebody,
what were some of those things?
When I look at a Walmart parking lot now, as compared to when I, prior to building this, it's a totally different situation. I'm thinking about where the water is going to run off. I'm looking at where their pipes are, where their manholes are. I'm looking to see how they did their stripes, how wide they are. There's just so many things that I'd never considered in this world that's built around us until after you've really done something like this. And I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing, but I certainly am more attentive to what's being done around me.
And that makes sense.
Like I can look at something and be like, wow, I see what they're going for here. Like you really understand what's going on now.
Yeah. One of the things that I was kind of sorting through, and I still don't know quite what the answer is this year, when we looked at some build from scratch scenarios from a land perspective, and some other people may have better perspectives or maybe working through the same thing, is, you know, thinking about an RV park that can only grow horizontally and not vertically, it can't yield the same type of return where you could put a 40-story condominium there or something like that. How do you know now that it could have been a good investment from an RV park perspective? Like, did you have any preliminary numbers that, you know, thought we can make sense? Or is it a scenario where having that business there could support the cost of the land and that the land still maybe end up worth more than the business? Because a lot of the RV parks we look at, the higher they get in revenue, you know, a lot of them go off this, you know, cap rate. So if you 10 cap, if your NOI is your net operating income is 300 grand, you know, maybe it's a $3 million park, but because it's in a primo spot in Houston, maybe the real estate is actually still worth more than the business. How did you kind of think through that piece, if that makes sense?
Us getting a good deal on the land, that helped us in numerous ways. Like we were able to, that meant we came out of, like when we did our loan, we didn't have to, we had so much equity in our land that we didn't have to put any money down on the property. And they didn't allow us to count all these engineering costs as soft costs. They just assumed that that should happen. So it doesn't add, the fact that you've engineered it doesn't add value as it relates to these, to the way the bank was looking at the value of the property. So like the, like when the appraiser goes out to look at the land and say, hey, if you build this, this, and this, then this is how much it is worth in this area on this square footage. So when he came back with his number, it didn't give us any credit for the fact that we had already spent $200,000 on soft costs, which is the engineering and the taxes and the impact fees and all the other stuff that we had done to maintain the property. That money's gone in terms of the, is in regards to how the bank would look at it. So the land itself, and so you kind of asked me a couple questions in there. So then to kind of what made us think it was a good idea that, you know, so when you look at the land and you're trying to figure out, hey, is this land going to, well, is this how this land will always be used? I mean, first of all, you kind of look at the neighborhood, you know, since we bought this neighborhood, since we bought this land, there's a 100-acre tract behind us that is now, I mean, they're being built every day. There's 500 D.R. Horton houses being put behind us. So there's, and then across the street from us is 300 houses that have been built for, I guess, you know, 8 years prior. And then across the street, there's a farm. And then if you go a little bit further down the street, there's another RV park. And that's when, that was kind of like a little bit of an aha moment, because you kind of look back at, you know, one of the things I remember as a youth is learning, you know, everyone talked about McDonald's and everything they did. And one of the things that I learned about McDonald's is, A, they always own their land, and B, Wendy's, you could always find a Wendy's across the street. Back when Wendy's was growing, you could always find a Wendy's across the street from a McDonald's. And what they were saying is, if someone's coming here for a hamburger, at least we have a 50-50 chance of getting their business. And so inside of this area that we are in, that this property is located, there's within 4 miles, there are, let's see, five other RV parks competing for the same business that we are. And while that should scare you, and it may one day, what it also lets me know is that there's demand in this particular area for that. So what can I do to differentiate myself going in so that I don't have to worry about what I look like coming out? And that's when I really, you know, that's when I kind of have to stop and, you know, let you know, like, without my partner, I probably would not have built the product, or we wouldn't have built the product that we did. He's kind of one of those gents that doesn't, you know, you do everything perfect or not at all. And I believe in the same thing, but his perfect is just a little bit more perfect than what I'm used to. And, you know, that's where we kind of, you know, I think when we put luxury RV resort on our website, I don't think that we're overstepping. I think we kind of hit it. And so for in this Google Ads world that we live in, to where you don't really have to be the best at what you do. Like, I mean, if you just throw a ton of money at marketing, you're going to fill up as an RV park anyway. And it really has, I mean, at least that's what I'm learning. It's less about your reviews than it is about just getting out there and covering the world with all your Google ads. And
maybe in the short term, I don't know if that's true long term. I think your review is long term.
Let's hope not.
Yeah, I think long-term reviews will win out. That's my opinion. I could be wrong. But going back to what you said about having five RV parks in the same area, that's so true. For me, our first year on the road, we met a guy in Seattle. He owned like 26 Domino's. Like all the if you ever go to a Domino's pizza in Seattle, this guy owns them. And he would say that he would find a location like
literally maybe a mile away. And a lot of people would be like, you already have a Domino's here. I mean, in theory, if you put another one in, you split your business in half. But what it turns out in is that your business at your original one increases and your other one does just as good as your other one, because there's, you know, there's so much demand and there's already, you know, people in that area. So I just thought that was really interesting, and that makes sense that it's the same for RV parks. So when you guys first had this, when you first had this thought, you were looking at a man camp that's like pretty raw, $450 a month, no amenity, well, bare minimum amenities. And now you end up with this incredible luxury resort. And we'll link up to the campground, the RV park in the show notes, because it does look beautiful. The pool, like the room, like all the photos that you guys have, it looks incredible. I'm stoked to come out there. Next time we're in Houston, we'll have to drop by and visit. But, you know, when in the conversation with your partner, Jay, did it go from, hey, let's build an RV park to let's actually do something really nice that most of the industry doesn't have right now?
Good question. So we'll step out of chronological order to get to that point.
we'll come back.
I have to backtrack just a little bit. When we had, this originally started as four partners. I brought Jay with me, and then the other gentleman brought a friend of his with him. So we were four ways on it. And I had spent the last year getting this thing engineered and dealing with getting it permitted. And I really hadn't gotten that. I mean, I thought I was close, but I was still a year away at that point, which is totally crazy. But we were sitting there, and it was actually an Astros playoff game. And the day before, I had spoken with one of our partners, and I was like, hey, you know, I think we're going to have to put some more money in the account, get this thing rocking. I got to pay these guys, got to pay these guys. He's like, yeah, Eric, you know, I wanted to talk to you about that. I don't think we're, because I, you know, I'm not going to sign a note. I don't think I'm going to be signing a note anytime soon on this. I'm like, you know, why? All right, that's fine. If you're paying cash, that helps all of our situation. He goes, no, I'm saying I'm not going to do it. And I mean, like, I'm kidding. I knew he would. That's what he meant. But he's like, I'm not going to do it. And so I went to, I had kind of seen this coming. I had some backup options ready. I went and spoke with my best friend and partner on this. I said, Jay, here's the situation. He's backing out. He's like, good. What's it take to, you know, what's the dollar amount? What's it going to take? Let's get him out. And then, you know, we want the other partner out too, and let's just make it our deal, and let's go do something, as you said, special. Like, let's put our mark on this thing. Because, man, you know, I didn't like where this was going anyway. It was going to be that typical crap that just like everyone else had done. Let's go do something here. And so we went, you know, maybe had a beer or two at the Astros game, and I think we won that night. And
that always helps.
This was prior to, you know, to us cheating. So you can't discount the moment.
You don't have to disclose this. I'm a Houston boy. There's no hate here. Probably from others. Well, yeah, but
yeah, all your listeners are probably like ugging at us even talking about the Astros. But what we did was at that moment, like, put a stamp on it and got real. It was his idea to name it. Eric and Jay's as well. I believe in putting our names on it. I think that's important. I think anything you put your name on has a better chance of succeeding, because if you put your name on it, that means you're going to treat it with just that extra little bit of love. I mean, that's your name. It's right there. You have to protect that. You have to make it look good. And I mean, I kind of feel like that's when I look at my park and I see a weed here or there, that's how I treat it. I want that park. We're not there yet. We're pretty darn close, though. When we get updated pictures on the website, I think you'll notice that what we're going for is kind of like an RV park on Augusta grass, which is where they play the Masters, for anyone that may have missed that. But we want it to be tight. And so then, you know, once you have Jay involved, things kind of go, when you get all of Jay's love and attention, things kind of go from a level three to like a level five real quick. And he starts calling in all the big dogs. He was able to get Renee Abbott. And I don't know if you followed decorators or designers or, but she's a big deal. And she was doing some work with him on another project, and she was able to get her to sign up to do a commercial project and at a price that we could afford. And that is like the decisions. And all I'm saying is anyone that thinks that they can, that they don't need a decorator has not had one. Like you know, blue or gray. Like they can answer. I think that, you know, decorators and real estate agents are probably two people that don't receive the respect that they deserve. I mean, they are so helpful. And in this case, she took us from a three to a five. And when you look at us online, you can, like, it doesn't, you know, you can try and duplicate it, and it's just not going to be the same. It's just the little stuff that she did really took it and makes it when you walk in there, you're like, wow, this is really, really cool. Never seen anything like this. This is great. And these are, you know, this is like what people say every day when they walk in.
Yeah, I love that. And honestly, it's one of those things in the RV park world where if you tried to build a resort based on what's out there, you'd probably end up just maybe improving a little bit. It, you know, it takes something like the conversation that you and Jay had, apparently a beer at the Astros game, to start thinking through something fresh from scratch to kind of reinvent what that feels like. And also think just kind of at a macro view in a general business perspective, it's also a good takeaway that if you find good A players early on in any business, they're going to attract other people as well. So it's almost like about getting the right people on the bus and then figuring out where you want to take it. I 100% stole that because I'm rereading Good to Great right now by Jim Collins, and that's something he talks about, but I think it's so true.
Yeah, you're spot on with that. I mean, like, so just to even have a Renee Abbott design clubhouse is crazy. Then Jay's, he's really pretty smart when it comes to business and other things. But when it comes, like, I learned a lot working with him, and it was a huge opportunity to work with your best buddy. And that part, like, for instance, he protects his investment. And one of the ways that he does that is, you know, hey, Eric, what do you think about, like, since it's you and me now, we don't have to sell this cost on these other people, why don't we get a consultant to look at our plans and make sure that everything's exactly the way we need it to be so that we don't build, you know, $4.5 million piece of concrete and then we can't rent it to anybody. And so we did. We went and found a gentleman who's built for his dad and for himself, I think 7 different parks in the Houston area. And I think the family just recently sold him, but they're the big guy in town. And so to get his stamp of approval, that was pretty huge. And it took him 2 months to fix it. And what we figured out is that our engineers had not put any details into our plans. So, you know, lots of little things missing. Like, what are you going to do about this? You know, what are you going to do for the pipe on the sewer? What are you doing here? Like, there's so many things. What type of pedestal are you going to go with? That was a huge move. I mean, and it gives it gives both of us, you know, so that way you're not getting caught up in the deal. It was another way of checking and making sure we were on the right path. And, you know, one of the things that he was quick to point out to us is, hey, you know, really, you guys, for this property and what you paid for it, you know, the type of revenue you want, you're going to want, I mean, really, you need to buy the 2 acres behind you, because you need to be able to build 150 pads. That's the appropriate size for this. And unfortunately, what we couldn't do is buy the 2 acres behind us. We made an attempt at it, but at that point, going back and trying to add that wasn't something that we could do. That doesn't mean that we're hurting, because we didn't. In fact, it's actually kind of nicer to be smaller just because it gives me the ability to be able to walk that park and know everybody's name and like give individual treatment and really be able to understand what people's wants and needs are and like be able to have open conversations and know who all these people are and be able to find out what I can do to make it better for them. And that's like, I think at 150, it'd be pretty tough, but I can remember names up to about 65. So whoever moves in past today, we're in trouble.
No, that makes total sense. And going back to when you guys first closed on the land, I know we can talk about this whole process probably for quite some time, but personally, I think it could be really helpful for anybody who's thinking about maybe buying a campground or RV park one day, or just maybe interested in how different businesses work. After you guys closed on that land, what was kind of the process in between? And I know you kind of touched on some parts of it, like the permitting and things like that. Like if you think of the checklist that you had to go through from closing on the land to, you know, opening the doors on day one. And I think we could probably sit down for like 3 hours to go through this whole thing, but you know, just at a high level, what were some of the things that you had to go through before you ever could even maybe even break ground on the building on the construction side, if that makes sense?
Well, I can tell you this, that a lot of people talk, I mean, you're from this area and I'm sure you've heard it, that City of Houston doesn't have any zoning and you can pretty much build whatever you want, wherever you want. You've probably heard that.
I haven't, but are you about to tell me that's not true?
It's very not true. In fact, it's kind of true, but it's like, you know, like it's like a trick, you know, like it's like that on the way in. And then on the way, when you get everything back and they're like, no, you can't do this, this and this. Wait, it's totally not true. But a lot of what happened is the city of Houston wasn't prepared for RV parks inside the city. There aren't that many of them. It's not something that they're used to doing. And they're very worried that it could be a mobile home park and that I'm tricking them. That kind of, the first time we went in, that was one of the problems, is they thought we were going to be a mobile home and they were convincing them otherwise was pretty close to impossible. So we had to have sidewalks in places where there were people parking and it was throwing off all the numbers and in terms of how we could, you know, how big our pads could be and what we could provide. And that was, I mean, just one instance. I can't even tell you. I'm pretty sure if I had to count, like realistically, this during the permit to banking stage, this deal died 7 times. We were like, well, now what are we going to do with it? Oh, well, let's go list it. Like, a year and a half flushed down the toilet, you know, gone. I don't know if that happens with every development, but it certainly did happen on this one. And it was like one of those moments you're like, almost want to cry in your hands 7 times. I wouldn't be able to pinpoint how many different things happen. And some of it is so ugly that I don't even want to go into it. It certainly is something that goes out there.
At a high level, was the biggest reason why the deal was blocked from a permitting perspective, just because they were afraid it was a mobile home park?
You're trying to convince a city that it's okay for you to do 450 loads of trucks of concrete. We have to talk with Harris County Flood Control and figure out what they're okay with. And then the city of Houston is like, well, we're not okay with that. And so what happened to us is we're on the corner. And so we have Harris County Flood Control on our long street. And then on our short street, we have City of Houston. And so we had to follow the flood control for both of them and find a way to make both of them happen. And so you're using kind of worst case situation for both of them. So like, they say you can do this, they say, so you end up with really a, and that's one of the reasons we had different pad sizes and really had to kind of press upon our engineers to maximize what we could do there. And how they figured it out, I'm not really sure. Then once we got everything nice and cool, and like we were expecting our signed permits, I think it was like two Novembers ago, the city of Houston came back and they're like, well, wait, there's an asterisk here that says you guys need to stop what you're doing and contact right of way. And we're like, what? And so they're saying that you guys can't build this close to that. So now that was one of the times that it died. And what they were saying is, in between the time that we had bought it and started getting our initial set of plans reviewed, and so you get one set of plans reviewed and you're like, okay, great. So then you move on to we're going to fix everything and then we're going to come back to you. So we had done that, I think, three times, which is a lot. And you normally have about 2 months in between each of those, unfortunately. What they did is they came back and said, hey, the city of Houston's planning on widening this street and we need you to give us this much land. And so then we had to go back in at that point in time. Well, first we had to like have three or four meetings about what the heck we were going to do to fix it. So we met with the engineer had a way to figure it out, but it was going to take his contacts at the city of Houston being okay with another way of what we were going to, of how we were doing it and kind of approving it on the fly, so to speak. And what we did, because what was happening is our property line wasn't changing, but as it turned it, what it turned out to be is the city of Houston was kind of waiting for us to get to this stage so that they could then tell us that, hey, that we want that land and you need to give it to us if you want to build this. And they were like, what? But since we weren't using it, it was actually fine because it was kind of dead land anyway. I mean, we weren't using it. So what we do is we gave it to them, but then you had to get new surveys, and surveys are expensive. Like we had to do a lot of work to then take and give that land to them, which is fine because now we don't pay taxes on that land. That was the longest like death to the project that we had. That was like a week to figure it out.
Why didn't you just quit?
I don't know, man. I really don't know. It's stubborn. And I'm kind of a pit bull on stuff like that. Probably one of my strong suits is that I stay with it. You're just going to you're going to have to back me off. It would have taken Jay really telling me, look, you got to stop, drop it. And, you know, the engineers like stepped up and got on it at that point, too, because I think we probably owed them some money at that point in time. And I wasn't going to pay them for something that was their mistake that they should have known was coming anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they probably see it differently, but I wasn't going to part with it without an argument. That's for sure.
If somebody is going through this process that you went through, not the exact one, but say trying to start an RV resort and they're going through the permitting process, what do you feel is the one of the biggest things you learned during this whole period of time that you took away from that whole experience?
Well, so one of the things that happened to us on this project that was kind of different was we picked the project. When we bought the project, it already had $7,000 of engineering fees taken care of. So our engineering firm was handed to us. So of course, me being the cheap dude that I was at the time, because I definitely think bigger than that now. I was like, oh, well, $7,000. All right, that's already part of it. Sure enough, that bill found a way back to me, even though it had already been paid. But picking what could have happened at that point in time is we could have gone and picked out a guy that was a little more versed in exactly what we were doing and understood that we were a rookie group of developers and that they were going to need to help us. But I mean, we were pretty easy to trick, you know, like. If I asked them to explain a bill, all they had to do is drop like 50 words that I've never heard before that they know. And, you know, by the end of the conversation, I'm just like, all right, I'm done. Okay, who do we pay?
Yeah.
And how do you want it? How quickly? I mean, they could exhaust this into the bill. Interviewing engineering firms is something that I wish I had had the opportunity to do in this project. And then since I didn't, what I wish I had done is been smart enough to stop at $7,000 and not think that that really means something. I mean, I believe our total bill was $120,000 for engineering.
Yeah.
And that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's,
so
that's a little more, it's quite a bit more than it should have been. We went with a super big firm. And I think these guys could, they build much bigger things than this. And I think the project was really tough for them as well. And speaking with them at the end of this, they're like, we do not take on RV parks anymore. Not inside the city of Houston. We'll do them in other counties, but we will not do them inside city of Houston anymore. Y'all's project is impossible.
Wow. That's what you call a little bit of a building a moat around your business, because it's there's a challenging point of entry there. And now, like, after going through this process, which does not sound, I don't envy, now you can show up at Eric and Jay's RV resort and walk around and kind of like feel like, what does it feel like now that after going through all that and getting to actually see what it's become?
You know, I think I'm probably I'm at least 3 months. I mean, we've been open for 100 and almost 4 months. We're probably at like 115 days right now. The pat myself on the backstage is far and it's way back in, it's in history.
Yeah.
Houston just had that tropical storm Beta that ran through our town and came in really, really slow, much like Harvey. And Harvey was a tough son of a gun on this town. Like, it just rained and rained and rained. And it's like a hurricane decided to spend the night here for, you know, it's like a bad ant that came in for one night and stayed for 4 days. And then this Beta kind of started doing the same thing. And it was getting kind of scary. So, like, I was worried on what our, how we would handle all that water. And I got it. Like yesterday, I did have a moment as I have a couple that's in from Atlanta and we were talking and he's going through chemotherapy. Super, like, these guys are great. And we were just kind of talking about everything and they were like, and you know, one of the things about RV clientele is they're paying attention. Like they're curious, you know, how much water is this place going to take? They're as mindful as I am on how I measure up in regards to how much water did we take? Where did that water go? When's that detention going to push over? And we handled that water so well. Like, there's other parks in town, I won't name them unless you tell me to, that flooded. We were so far from flooding. I mean, I went to the park yesterday morning, and the only thing I saw out of place was some of that blue star rock. I went, took me a minute to put it back in place with my foot. We had a lot more water in my detention than we had normally ever had. And everything else was cool. And that was, you know, if I was still patting myself on the back, that would have been an opportunity to do so.
Now that the park is alive and going, what's been the most, not necessarily tied to patting yourself on the back, but what's been the most meaningful part of running the resort?
I've learned a couple things. Like, so took me a second to figure this out. Whenever I go on that park, what I have to realize is, like, my park manager, Don Wilson, who, like, God sent him to us. I think this dude is just super laid back. He actually called me, said, "Hey, you need to hire me." Like, all right, let's, you know, what do you got? And he had tons of experience and he's just super laid back and he's the face of the operation. I mean, it's Eric and Jay's, but he's the one that they're talking to when they come in and he's the one that makes them feel comfortable over the phone. He's a breath of fresh air the moment you walk into our park. And the part that's what I started to realize is, these people that are living in fifth wheels. I mean, there's guys on there that, like, you know, millionaires 100 times over type of guys. And while they may have a ranch or something somewhere else, when they're in town doing business, this is how they prefer to stay. And one of the reasons they like us is because we ran internet to each and every pedestal so they can work out of their rig, which that was kind of a plug. But it's important because if people decide to work out of their rigs nationwide, I'm already halfway there. All my stuff's in the ground and it's going to every pedestal. And we are in I didn't want to fight that Wi-Fi battle of trying to get everybody internet, and you know, you got radiant barrier stopping you. But one of the things, to kind of go back to your question, one of the things that really it took me a second to figure out is, like, when I come in and I've been working my other job and I show up and I'm like, all right, Don, where's this? Don, da, da, you know, and I start breaking stuff down on him. His eyes get big. He's doing his best to stay up with me because that's the kind of guy he is. But I'm bringing a totally different mentality than whatever should be on that park. No one should bring that kind of stress onto a park. No one on that park wants to be stressed out. They're there because they've chosen this life. And that, like, when I get there, when I have learned to show up at that park and be a relaxed individual, everything goes a lot smoother. And everyone gets it. That's what people are happy there. People, like, they're doing this because they're trying to get away from all the stress and all the extra bills. So the one thing that I've really learned is I need to take a deep, you know, maybe three deep breaths before I show up in there, give yourself a fake smile, and then it becomes contagious, hopefully. And then go in there and start doing my work on that part. But I love it because it's good. That's what I was looking for all along, is a place where I didn't have to be super stressed out at work. But then here I am bringing the stress to the work. And that's not the way to do it. It's good to be laid back if you can.
I love that. Well, congrats on everything, Eric, with the resort and bringing it to life. And props on wiring high-speed internet to all the sites. Every single campground should be listening and taking notes from that, because I would prefer high-speed internet at my campsite over cable any day. I've literally never plugged into cable, I don't, at a campground in 6 years. But anyway, if somebody's listening to this and they're going to be driving through Texas soon in their RV, how can they find you guys? How can they book and come stay with y'all?
Well, first and foremost, go to Eric and Jay's RV Resort. Do not Google it. Eric and Jay's RV Resort.com. Because every time I kind of mentioned that a little earlier, but without meaning to, but Google has found a way. They have a piece of everything and they own it. And while I'm trying to fill up this park, I've learned that, golly, you know, Google has a pretty good hold on everything, and you just got to suck it up. And that's maybe lesson number six, is lean into it, pay Google, and then hopefully stop.
Wait, so are you saying to type in Eric and Jay's RV Resort.com? Because if you type in Eric and Jay's RV Resort,
Google searching it,
because then somebody because Google is placing ads above Eric and Jay's Resort on Google if you search it.
Well, no, because then I'm paying for those ads now, but now I got to pay $7 anytime any of you guys come to check out my site.
All right. Well, let's do this. Google search Eric and Jay's RV Resort. Don't click on the top ad listing. Go to their website, because that's going to help you get better organic Google results and effectively have you cut the cost. So it actually will save you money, but just don't go click on his ad three or four times. But just go click on the direct website, so then you don't have to pay for ads because you're number one.
There you go. And so all this Google stuff is new to me, if you can't tell by how upset I am about it. I had no idea. But yes, thank you for that clarification. That's important. Well, and I think That's actually another good thing. Once I hit this Google Ads thing and fill this park up, it'll go, you know, where the location that I've chosen and the model that I have for this, it'll fill up and I won't have to go back. You know, like I may have to go back 1,000 here or there, but it won't be what I'm having to do right now.
But for sure.
Because I mean, if people are staying for, I would think that people that we're going to average probably 8 months for everyone that gets on the park.
Oh, wow. So longer term stays.
Yes, sir.
Nice.
For sure.
That's awesome. Well, Eric, thanks so much for coming on the podcast, man. I'm going to link up to Eric and Jay's RVResort.com so people can go check it out. I highly recommend it if you're going to be going through Houston to check it out. It's gorgeous. I haven't got to see in person. I've just looked at a ton of photos. So thanks again so much, man, for coming on the podcast.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey guys, thank you so much for tuning into today's episode with Eric. If you want to check him out, be sure to Google search Eric and Jay's RV Resort and go visit them whenever you're driving through Houston. They have an amazing, amazing setup. By the way, this is not a sponsored episode. I just think they have a really cool park and a great story, and I was happy to have them on the podcast. Eric, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll see you all next time on the RV Entrepreneur Podcast.